It's the motherfucking Millennial Miha podcast.
Welcome back to the Millennial Miha podcast. I'm here today with my very fashionable new friend, Jorge Xolalpa.
Did I say
it correctly?
Yes.
Yes, that's the elephant in the room because I've been like trying to say that name on the way here for so like, just like, let me get it rolling off my tongue because you know what? I don't want to be that guy. But
hi. You did nice. You did great.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so glad you're here. Look, come closer so you can be on camera.
There you go.
They have to see your beautiful face and your beautiful outfit because you came in here stunning.
Thank you.
But you also have a stylist, so I feel like I'm jealous.
And I'm cheating too, right? Because it's like, I gotta be like,
cheating,
I put this together.
Or is it called strategy?
Well, you know what? The thing is too, I'm so used to it now. Like I said, I put this together. Like I just threw this on and I guess it worked.
But when you like get these staple pieces, when you have to throw something together, you're already fashionable because everything you have is fashionable. Yeah. So it's like it functions in so many different ways.
Yeah, and I almost like I've had this for maybe like about a month and I thought I'll use it one day, but it's so baggy. I didn't think it was going to look nice and I kind of like it. It's in, you know, all the baggy stuff is in.
Yes. I mean, having a stylist is in. I feel like that's a goal of mine.
Shout out to Coty Dominguez, who's always styling me.
So welcome back to the Millennial Miha podcast. I'm here with my friend Jorge. He's a writer, producer, director, a seasoned veteran in film festivals. That's what I read on IMDb.
Yeah, that sounds like, oh, and I've only been doing this for 5 years.
Wow.
Only 5 years, yeah. Because I've been into a total of about 175 festivals.
So you've been working.
Yeah, I'm a festival hoe.
You were not fucking around. You were here to work.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about my weekend. So what did you do this weekend?
I actually didn't do any. Oh, no. It was my niece's birthday party. She's 6. And I hung out with her.
Family?
Yeah. Yesterday, yeah. All day. Yeah. We had cake. And a lot of tacos.
Cake,
oh my
hell
god,
yeah.
It was so delicious. Yeah.
Dude, that was family it. Parties are clutch for the food, and then you get
yes.
leftovers. And,
yeah. And it was the first party since, we're still during COVID, but it was the first thing we did since the lockdown. So.
Oh, as a family.
Yeah, I hadn't seen them since March 2020.
So that was a reunion.
Yeah, yeah, it was wonderful. Yeah, it was fun.
On Friday, I had the honor of being asked to be on the Homegirl Fox podcast, and I went out there to Montebello. Shout out to Fox. We made magic in that episode. We really, like, she was a worthy adversary when it comes to interviewing, because she was, like, getting me here and there, and I'm like, she's asking good-ass questions. But we definitely made magic, and I'm excited to see what else we create magic together, because it's for sure happening. The podcast was at a store in Montebello. That's her friend's store. It's called Limitless. They sell like shoes and clothes and everything like that. But they have a studio in the back that they allow her to use to like do her stuff. And I think I love when friends are supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Like we need like a creative family.
Yeah.
Because your tia doesn't know shit about, you know, like starting a clothing brand, you know. So it's like you need these kind of like business family members that you create that kind of help push you and you push them. And it's like this, that's what I think a real true partnership is and a true friendship is. And I liked that dynamic over there.
And true support too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you need people that believe in you.
Yeah.
And it seems like they have that dynamic over there. So shout out to Limitless in Montebello. Saturday, I had a Season of Self workshop. So I do these self-healing workshops called Season of Self.
Okay.
And I know you're all about healing too. I listened to some of your stuff.
Mm.
So in 2019, everybody on this show already knows this, but in 2019, I decided to detox off medication I had been on for like 10 years. And it was like 5 different ones. So it was like a hard thing. I had to come down and I had to like basically wake up to my life. And when I did, I needed something to kind of like live for,
right,
as you spoke about in your thing. And so the only thing that ever felt really good to me was teaching. So it was just like I started just teaching about the things that I had been like waking up to my life.
Mm-hmm.
So this last one yesterday was called Honoring Yourself. Shout out to everybody that came to that workshop. It was via Zoom, but it might as well have been in person because we were crying together, laughing together, like chopping it up like homegirls. And that was just like a really good, like a good pot of positive energy to be in for 2 hours, you know. And it's a 2-hour workshop and it's $25. And I just feel like it's this, not just a financial investment, but it's like a time investment in yourself. It's like pure healing the whole 2 hours, pure community. It's supposed to, the idea of Season of Self is that we're all healing individually, but we can also do that in community sometimes. And when we do that, it speeds up the process for all of us.
Well, and then you're all synced, you know, and it's, you're giving a workshop based on experience, which mm-hmm. is something that nobody else can do. Because yeah. they can't speak on your experience, so that's beautiful.
About the podcast, I mean, the workshop was called Honoring Yourself, and in order to get to the Honoring Yourself, that comes at the very last slide, but we have to go through all of the things I learned that I was doing to betray myself in order to get to the learning how to honor.
That's powerful.
So it was a journey that we go on, but in this workshop, I did something different, and I asked more questions, because usually I feel like it's a lecture. I'm like talking at people, and when it's their turn to do their assignments, mm-hmm. you know, they do it and then we share about it. But this time it was like 50% more sharing yeah. from people, because I didn't want to feel like, oh, I have the power of being this all knowing, like Wizard of Oz, like all the wisdom yeah, like yeah. that. Cause that's nowhere near. That's what the whole point is. It's a workshop
where everybody interacts yeah. and everybody shares their experiences. Yeah. That's actually really good.
It has more like 12 heads are better than one, yeah. you know? So it's like we can all have something to contribute. And I want to say thank you to everybody who came to that workshop yesterday, because all the women in there, like, just gave me so much energy and so much confirmation that I'm on the right path, and that that I'm thankful for. So thank you for coming to my workshop. So that was Saturday. And then I was supposed to go to the TGN bonfire, which I had completely planned to do. I mean, I even had like a cute little outfit. Just want to put that out there. But I went to sleep after my workshop, and bitch, I never woke up. I woke up until 8 p.m. and I woke up and I was like, let's go get In-N-Out. I was all grumpy. And then I got the In-N-Out. I was happy again. And then I went back to sleep. So I was like, I needed that rest.
Yeah.
We don't prioritize rest.
You have
enough.
To recharge, you know?
Yeah.
Especially after something like, you know, something so. I call it powerful, because when you're in a workshop like that and you're sharing personal experiences, you get drained.
Yeah.
And you need to recharge. That's beautiful.
There's like a part of me that gets recharged from doing it, but then a part of me that also gets drained.
Well, you lose something every time.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad thing, you know? It's mm-hmm. just,
there's a difference between losing something and giving it away.
Yeah.
Because that's what my dad would always say, yeah. was that the only way to keep what you've gained, the knowledge and the spiritual principles that you learn to be true, is to give it away to another yeah. person. And your job is not to, like, you know, micromanage what that person does with that information. It's just to continue giving it away. And I think that's something that you've been doing with your films.
Yeah, and it's a give and take. You know, you give and then you take something from that, you know, the same thing. You know, yeah. You learn from it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing.
So I want to get into, you're promoting your very new film that I'm going to go to the premiere of. And we're like, I was like, there's a red carpet. Yes. I have never. I'm so excited. I'm like, need an outfit ASAP. But I've never been on a red carpet. So first of all, how does it feel to have like.
That's Jenny. Oh, my God.
Of course it is.
The God. Okay.
You yeah, know.
There was no. It's just like today something. I believe in signs. And that's a sign for me today.
Right, you see now. What song it is?
Yeah, that's it. That's yeah. That's a sign.
That's a sign.
I can't really talk about it. But
confirmation.
It's a sign. It's a sign about something.
I feel the electricity.
Yeah, I want to cry. I love Jenny.
Hi.
Yeah.
So tell me, I want to talk about. Yes. So how does it feel, first of all, to be on the brink of sharing this film as a premiere? The film is called Melancholia. Is yes. that how you say it correctly? Because
yes.
I was
yes,
trying
yes,
to
yes.
say that shit the whole day, too.
Yeah, it's Melancholia. And it's actually, you know, I'm a little nervous because it's a really really hard film. It's about a school shooting, the aftermath of a school shooting. It concentrates in the lives of several parents, particularly one, as she's struggling with the year anniversary. And it's inspired by the Parkland shooting that happened in Florida a couple years ago. And it's a drama, but it's definitely a hard drama. I mean, you know, it was very difficult for me to make. I've been wanting to talk about gun control, and I've been wanting to talk about school shootings, but I actually didn't move forward until my niece was caught in the middle of a shooting at the Lama Mall a couple years ago.
Wow.
And you know, she's good, she's okay, nothing happened to her. But you know, waiting, you know, those 6 hours where we waited for people to get evacuated and just not knowing what's going on, really left something in me that I said I need to push forward and make this film. So I'm excited. I'm not sure how the audience is gonna take it. You know, and I don't want to say that I don't care, but I really don't, because I don't do films for that reason.
Yeah.
But I'm excited.
You
I'm
do
excited.
Them because they need to exist.
Yeah, and I do them for me, you know, because those are stories that I have in my heart that I want to tell and I want to talk about. And I want, you know, if people like them, great. And if they don't, then okay.
Yeah, that I read a review I think I maybe been LA Times, something on your page, and it said, definitely don't watch this if you're in a bad mental space.
Yeah.
I was like, that means it's extremely powerful.
Yeah. You know, that was, you know, I actually like that review a lot because it's a very, it's not a graphic film because there's no actual shooting. And that's the thing. It was very important for me when I was making this film that I said, I don't want to have a scene of the shooting. I think that Hollywood perpetuates that a lot and they just do that for
shock value.
Ratings and for shot value. I wanted to make a film about the life of a hospice nurse and how it's a little ironic that she takes care of people that are terminally ill, you know, and she kind of gives them the love that she couldn't give her child while she was dying. Mm-hmm. I think I just gave away a lot of the plot, but you know, you should still go and watch it.
Yeah, I definitely am, and I can't wait. We're gonna be on the red carpet, baby. I'm just so excited about that part, but I'm also excited to be watching a film by a Latino director.
Thank you. I'm excited too. I think that I wish there was more opportunities like that for other, because there's a lot of great Latino directors, very talented, aside from the three amigos that they're always talking about in Hollywood.
The three amigos.
Yeah, but there's a lot of talent, you know, out there. And I just feel really proud and, you know, honored that Hollywood is giving me this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You've given it to yourself by being good. You can't just, you know, make something and hope for the best. I know. It has to be good.
Which has kind of been, you know, it's been kind of the way I've been tackling things. I'm like, hopefully it comes out, you know, hopefully it's good. I tell people all the time, half the time I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, that's because that's what talent is. Mm-hmm. That's what pure talent is, when you just operate from that heart space of this needs to exist. And I want to talk about, first of all, I want to say I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
And I'm happy for you. That. And I cannot wait to see the film.
I can't wait for you guys to come out. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to definitely have to wear waterproof mascara because I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's when it did that warning about the mental space, I'm like, how? Let me check with myself. Am I in an okay space to see this? Yeah. But I think the review speaks to the poignancy of the way the film was made, because there's films about the same thing that might not have been as taken as strongly.
Yeah. And, you know, this critic, actually, before he wrote the review, he called and he said, hey, I watched this film and... He said, every time you know, what makes it really difficult is you keep pushing the envelope every time you make a film. Like, you know, there's like, it's like you almost have no boundaries. And I said, well, you know, if I'm an independent filmmaker, I think it's my responsibility to tell the truth, to speak my truth. You know, I'm not going to make something and sugarcoat it, especially because, I won't get too much into it, but gun control is an issue that's never going to stop because nobody wants it to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, not gun control, but the gun issue. Well, it's not going
to
stop, you know?
It's very beneficial to a lot of people.
To both parties, so I won't get into that.
It's very lucrative.
Yeah, as you said it, that's the preferred way of saying it, yeah. Same thing with, like, other things like abortion and so on and so on. But,
it's a racket.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about your early life and your childhood. Where did you grow up? Where are you from?
I'm from Mexico City. I grew up till I was 9 in Mexico, and then I came here when I was 9. Actually, September 16 was 23 years, and I've been here. So I grew up my entire, from 9 to now, Torrance. I grew up in Torrance, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and I was kind of like I was very shy, and I don't know, I feel like I was very introverted, yeah. I wouldn't make eye contact with people. I get really afraid. Okay. And then, I don't know, I was such a weird child. I'm still weird, but.
Same. The best people are weird. What were you like, so you were shy in... Was it shy, like, around people and then, like, extroverted at home? Or was it shy all the time?
No, it was just at home I was, like, talkative. I was always, like, super energetic. But I was the kid that would go to lunch and play with his Pokemon cards. Yeah, and just, like, hang out, like, some, like, stairwell. And just
were you, like, the kid that ran to lunch?
No.
You know those kids?
No, yeah, no, but no.
The kids...
You know, it's so funny because I have one of those, yeah.
Dude, it's really good for your back. Like, I really wish that I would have made a different choice because I have bad back to these days.
So, I remember starting my first day, people looking at me like, why do you have a luggage with you? I'm like, it's not a luggage. it's a Rolly backpack. I was like, you guys don't have those here.
From Rolly backpacks to red carpets, baby. There you go.
And it's so funny because I, for a whole year when I was in middle school, I would, like, pick up my lunch, and I would meet up with this dude who would, like, he would take my lunch. So instead of him, like, taking it from me, I would just be like, here it is. Like we had, like, a meetup, and we're like, here's my lunch.
So I'm gonna go, like, we can do, like, this the easy way or the hard way.
Please don't say, you know, I was that kind of person, and now I'm just kind of like...
He had an arrangement with his bully.
Yeah, yes, I did.
A prior arrangement.
I was like...
Take it.
But now I'm just like, why was I like that, you know? Mm. I mean, my family always had my back. I don't know why. I think it's just because it's a different country. And I didn't speak English, so I don't know. But, yeah, I was weird, definitely.
What did you want to be when you grew up as a kid?
Oh, I always wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to fly planes, yeah. Always. But I couldn't do it because I'm like really blind, and also I'm undocumented, so I couldn't go to flight school.
Okay.
Airplane school, whatever that's called.
What inspired that that dream? Pilot one.
I've always liked the sky, and I actually the real dream was to be an astronaut. Like, I know some people say that, but I'm obsessed with space. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with space. Like, I can't tell you that I know everything about it, but I know like certain things, and it's just it makes me think how minuscule we are.
Yeah,
you know, like there's so much out there, and I want to just go.
What else is fascinating to you about space? Tell me something off the top of your head.
Like, I'll keep it very simple. Like, you know how it takes 8 minutes for the light, like the sunlight, to hit us?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it takes about 8 minutes and a couple seconds. So we could be dying in 2 years. Like, the world can come to an end in 2 years if something exploded, like, far, far away, and it's going to hit its mark, like, in 2 years. I don't know. I have a feeling that the world's going to end in 2025. Oh, that's shit. Why I'm saying that.
All right, so we better get it. We better hurry
but
up
you
and
don't, you don't
accomplish
like
our dreams now. We only got so much time.
Yeah, I'm not going to get there. Yeah, I'm going to stop. But that's what fascinates me, you know? Like for instance, it takes Pluto 245 years to go around the sun. So if we lived on Pluto, we wouldn't have birthdays. Because it takes 245 years just to go around.
But you could still celebrate your birthday.
You could, but our birthdays would, instead of like 12 months, it would be like 12 years. Uh-huh. To just be one, two, three, you know, like.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy.
Time is also a construct too, though.
Yeah, it is. True. It's something to control. But isn't it fascinating, though?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Let me move to Pluto and then
let me come know how back. It goes.
Yeah, like.
Talk to Jeff Bezos. You can just go up there.
Right.
That guy.
That's another thing, too. Like, in the early 2000s, I remember we were talking about, why don't we go to Mars? And the government would say, oh, it's just a piece of rock. And now everybody's in such a hurry to go to Mars. It makes me think that the world is really going to end in 2025. I'm not going to get into that because I have a theory, but I'm not. I won't get into that, I promise.
Or global warming is going to end it. Like, we're going to end it because that's what we caused.
Yeah, definitely. One or the other.
One or the other.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
so.
Why, yeah, that's why I got obsessed.
Moving on from space, but I really love that about you. I love people's little fascinations.
Yeah.
I love that. Especially when it's, like, not related to what exactly they do.
I know.
Like, yeah. It's like their thing. So you left a legal career.
Yeah.
In order to pursue the dream of becoming a filmmaker.
Right.
How did you find yourself on the legal path?
So when I was in college, like I said, I was undocumented, and there was only certain careers that I could pursue, and DACA wasn't around. So then I thought, well, I'm going to major in political science and get a degree in law. And I just found myself really drawn into debating and talking about policy and talking about immigration. So I thought, I did get into law school, and I finished it. I just didn't take the bar. And my idea was to one day work at Capitol Hill as a lobbyist or just work, you know, at a firm. But then I was going through a transition period in my life where I felt so misunderstood, and I ended up watching Black Swan, and it changed my life.
Yeah.
I don't know how it did it. I mean, now I know now, but then I didn't know, and it's just a film that I kept watching. And then I said, well, my excuse was to say I need to make films, right? Mm-hmm. And that eventually became what my career is now. And I like that it happened that way because had I gone to film school, I would probably be very meticulous about it because I'm a perfectionist. I've been told. I don't think I am, but I'd be like, ooh, you know, like Spielberg doesn't do it this way because this is what I hear all the time. And to me, it's just like, I know nothing about films. I break the rules, and this is what I'm making. And if you like it, great. And if you don't,
dude,
congratulations, you know.
Having no information sometimes is the best, greatest blessing because when you don't have any information, you can't operate by any rules, like you said.
Yeah. And
because you don't know them.
And looking back at, like, Black Swan, the reason why I gravitated towards it is because it's a film about, people think it's just about, like, ballet dancing.
It's but very
essentially,
poetic.
It's a film about an artist who's obsessed of being perfect, and it leads her to self-destruction.
Uh-huh.
And that's exactly what I was going through.
Yeah.
I wanted to be, like, this debater and this lawyer, and I was really perfect, you know, for my family, and be the first in family to go to college. And it just came to a point where I said, screw that. I don't need to be perfect.
Yeah.
I just need to do what's right.
Uh-huh.
And that was making films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the first, is the first film you made Blue Line Station?
Yeah, that was my first. I did it with the phone.
You did it with the phone, and there was a video that was called How to Make a Film with $100. You really made that film with $100.
I did. That's all I had.
What did you spend the $100 on?
Food.
Wait, that's so it. I thought it was going to be like, oh, I had to print the copies for the... No. Keeping you alive to make the film.
Yeah. We spent like... It was 11 days, so I had to break it down. And then the last day, we didn't have money because we spent it on 10 days. It was like $10 per day.
Uh-huh.
So then the 11th day, someone, I guess, saw that we looked I guess, like, we were struggling, and they gave us food.
Aww.
Yeah. Like, I went to a diner. I was like,
shout out to that person.
Yeah. I was like, I went to this little diner to shoot one of the last scenes where they're eating, like, ice cream and stuff. And I was like, can I shoot here? And they're like, sure. And then I had, like, Cheetos, I think, and that's all we were playing with. And the guy was like, do you guys want food? And I was like, sure. And he brought us, like, a bunch of stuff.
Aww.
And that gave it, like, gave us production value, which is really cool. Yeah, I didn't have a penny to my name because I had just survived a suicide attempt, and I, like, didn't have money. I lost my car, I lost my apartment, I lost everything.
Yeah.
So I didn't even have a phone. I had, like, an Android, and my mom actually gave me her phone, which I still have, the iPhone that I used to shoot
the
film.
The 6 Plus.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I have two actors, and they want to work with me. They like the script. I was like, why don't we do it? I was like, I don't need permits. I mean, my whole thing is, like, if I'm alive... You know, I had this idea in my head. I was like, the only thing that I could be good at is killing myself, and I couldn't do that. I was like, well, then let me just use my life to do something better. And I went out, and I did it. Like, wow. I got on the train. Like, I didn't even pay tickets. Like,
that's a big one.
Let me tell you something. There were some cops, like, and they, like, you know how they asked for tickets at the train? They were, like, super chill the whole time.
Yeah.
I don't know how they saw me. They were probably like, this kid is weird, but let's just help him.
All of that was creator. All of that was God.
Yeah.
All of the ancestors holding your hand through this whole process.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting because I always talk
and
about...
And I just want to say I'm so happy you're still here.
Oh, no. Thank you. Yeah. I would
that
talk about this.
That was 2015, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I seen that. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. So, you know, last time I talked about this in the show, I, like, broke down crying. But, like, now I feel like I've healed from it, you know, and I talk about it and I tell people that... You know, I can't stop you from doing something, but what I can tell you is that, you know, you could do much more.
Yeah.
You could do much more while you're here, so, and that's important.
You gave yourself you got a second chance.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm, like, just 5 years old now.
Yeah.
I really do feel that way. That's why, like, I'm no longer, like, afraid of anything. I don't care about things that I can't control, and I go on the day-to-day. Like, that's all I do.
Okay, I hope y'all writing this down, because those are the facts, the, like... Because the fearlessness. Okay, so fear is the thing that we have to overcome. I talk a lot about this stuff in my podcast. I talk a lot about healing, recovery, and self-control. And because my theory is you can't love yourself till you like yourself.
Yeah.
And you can't like yourself till you know yourself.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm on the season of self. I'm trying
that.
To get to know myself and hopefully inspire others to do the same. But this... All of this stuff we talk about, like recovery and healing, and it all ties into your story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all ties into your story. And I want you to tell me about that part of your life, if you feel comfortable. I guess tell me about the darkness before we talk about the light.
You know, I...
Do you not remember?
No, I do remember, but not that I think about it. It's just like, it was just things that they were probably not big of a deal, you know? It was like my very first relationship had come to an end. And then, like, also I lost my job. And then... I feel so misunderstood.
Series of unfortunate events.
Yeah, I feel so misunderstood. I feel like I still feel that same, by the way. I'll explain what I mean with that. I feel like I didn't belong on this earth. And I still feel that same way, but it doesn't push me to how it pushed me in 2015. Now it's just like, I was having a conversation with that yesterday. I went to see him, and he's a hardcore Christian, and, you know, he doesn't agree with a lot of things my views, but I was telling him, well, you know, at the end of the day, like, I believe in energy, and I think that I was meant to come to this earth to do something bigger, something, and it doesn't have to be financially, it doesn't have to be just something, you know, I've always believed
the
that
impact.
I'm gonna be in history books somehow. You know, and it's like, it's not a matter of me or my ego speaking. I just know that for a fact because, you know, wherever I walk into, I'm always so blessed, you know, like I hear about these stories, how, you know, there is a lack of representation in Hollywood, but I walk into these rooms, these really powerful rooms with, like, really powerful people, and I don't get treated the way other people talk about Latinos getting treated, right? Which is not right. We should all get treated the same. We should all be given the respect that we need when we walk into a room, but it's also, I think, the energy. There's like some kind of energy, and what I do is I play the game with these, you know, people, and then I make sure that if I get pushed forward, I bring my people, and then I bring along, you know, I create more opportunities, and that's how I kind of gravitate, if that makes any sense. But the darkness doesn't really do anything to me anymore. And whenever I get to that point where I feel like I'm going to get depressed, I have this like ritual where I'll stand in front of a mirror and I'll say, okay, I feel you, I see you, but you don't belong here. So then I let it happen because it's a process, the human process. You know, my brain has to feel it, my body has to feel it. And it's like, you know, it's like a reset in a way.
Yeah.
But it all starts with energy, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll show him how to play that sound bowl with his energy. And like it's like a vibration. Yeah. And it's when you're talking about walking into those rooms and like, what is it like? That was a question I had down here. Oh. What is it like to be a Latino in those spaces and like the film? Well, film festivals, like Hollywood in general, is just a white institution.
Yeah.
Right. So any branch you know, the film festivals or the, you know, the award shows or whatever it is that you're participating in, what is it like to be in those spaces?
You know, it's so different because festivals are always fun. You know, I've never experienced anything in festivals where I don't think I've ever experienced any kind of other way of treatment when it comes to just in general. But then again, I am just starting. You know, I've only been here, been doing this for 5 years. But I always talk about like claiming your power, learning how to say yes and no. You know, walking into a room and realizing that you're going to walk into the room for something that you don't have. So don't make plans with something that you don't have. And an example would be, like, I remember having a meeting at a big agency, and the meeting didn't last more than like 5 minutes because they said, well, what can we do for you? And I said, absolutely nothing. Because the attitude, I was just like, well, we're not going to vibe. I was like, you don't come into a room and say, what can I do for you? Like, what does that mean, right? So it's like I always talk about being, you know, having integrity and saying no. I walked away and it was something that I didn't have, that I really wanted, but I didn't have. And I was totally okay walking away. But then there's moments where you walk into a room and things that would generally take months happen instantly. And it's just, it really depends. Again, it really depends. The universe and you know, the higher power up there really knows where to put you at the right time where you need to be. And, you know, it's part of the journey.
And it's easier for you to trust that now than it was when you were in that dark place.
Oh, 100%.
Like, because it's like we know the same things to be true, but depending on where we're standing in our life, it looks differently.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's again, you claim your power. And in a way, you learn how to live with that. I mean, it's important. It's important that you said something earlier, how to like learn how to believe. No. What was it?
Love yourself.
Love yourself, yeah. But it also starts with believing in yourself, you know? It's like if you walk into a room and say, oh, I made this film, but it's not the best film, I'm not interested. I don't want to watch it then. Because if you're not putting, like, I'm not saying you should come in and say, oh, it's one of the best selling films, but you should be proud of what you did.
Confident.
That's when people tell me, I had someone, a critic, who said, you shouldn't be promoting something that you made with $100, you know? I was like, why not?
Who would say that?
I was like, why wouldn't I promote that? You know, why? I mean, it's something that
you're
made.
You're proud of, something you're proud of.
And beyond that, it's my work. You know, it's like, it's my resume, and it's also what I've done. You might not like it. That's fine.
Well, it speaks about you, too, because people who know that it doesn't take $100 to make a film.
It doesn't.
So it's basically saying, like, look what I made with nothing. And it can compete with the people that had budgets.
Yeah. I mean, I made a film about my mom's life that we made with $1,500, and it almost got nominated for a Golden Globe.
Iron Lady. Iron Lady, right?
Yes, and it was competing with these, like, motion pictures that spend, like, $3 million to make, right? And that's incredible because, you know, I think people see it from the outside. It's like, oh, this guy thinks he's the shit, right? No, I just think that if I'm able to do it, someone else can too. And if you don't know how, I'll be more than happy to help you. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't understand.
Yeah.
That it's not only about me. Actually, it's never about me. Half the time when people talk about me or say things about me, it's not about me. It's more about them.
Yeah.
And I just accept that. And I just wish people would open, like, see the bigger picture. Me stepping into these rooms and getting into these places is not just for me. It's
Are
for
you
all
referring
of us.
To kind of criticism that you've gotten?
Good and bad criticism, you know, colleagues, you know, just people in general when they have an opinion about certain things, right? And I was talking about this Friday, you know, like, it's like you cut those people out, you know, but they, you know, they continue and it just keeps going on. It's like a snowball effect, you know. But the bigger picture is when I'm able to create something and I'm able to achieve something like the Golden Globes, it's not just for me. It's for everybody. And if these certain people can't see it that way, then it kind of just says why we're kind of like lacking too. You know, some of the big studio heads that have not given me that green light, not that I deserve it, and I've talked about this, but that have not been so easy to like move forward with projects have been Latinos, which is really sad, like really powerful Latinos. And I always talk about this. It's not that I deserve it.
Well, they're gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And they think that it's necessary for them to control the way Latinidad is viewed by the public. It's like they treat it like a huge responsibility, but then don't treat it like a responsibility because they turn people away that deserve space. And that gatekeeping shit is some real
So that's why I'm excited to see how it goes this year.
Yeah.
With, like, awards and stuff. You know, Alessandra, the lead actress in Melancholia, she's amazing. Like, she deserves to get nominated for an Oscar. And I keep saying it. I'm putting it out there.
Yeah.
You know, I keep saying that because she really, like, you know, this is a woman who took a 7-year break from her singing career, from her acting career, you know, to be with her daughter. And now she comes back with this film. And I don't know. It's beautiful.
The performance is just top tier.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it. Well, I mean, it has to be because of that review. I mean, because of what it seems like, too. Even the trailer is, like, emotionally intense.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, also, in another film, I looked at Valentina.
Yes.
That's a badass woman right there. And I just saw the trailer.
Victoria. She's my
she was
collaborator.
Was she on Rica Famosa Latina? Rica Famosa Latina?
She was.
That is my show, okay?
I love that show, too.
Okay. Yeah. So, we'll talk about that later. But talk to me about that film, because that's a badass woman character right there.
So, that was my second film. And I remember Blind Station was going through the festivals. And I said, well, you know, maybe I can do this. So then I decided to write a script. And me and her actually met back in 2013. That's when I decided I want to make films. But I don't count that because I didn't actually start until 2016. And I tweeted her. She was very nice. Went to have dinner. And then we became like family. Like, she's like a sister now. Mm-hmm. And we talk all the time. So then she had seen Blue Line Station. We watched it together. We cried because she was really proud that I had always talked about making a film. And she said, well, maybe we should make one now. And I was like, cool, let's make a film. So I wrote the script, and we shot that in 7 days with $500. And the film went to become something that I never thought it would become. I mean, it went to open at the Berlin Film Festival, which I didn't understand the magnitude until about 2 years ago. I was like, oh, Berlin is like a huge festival, right? And then, you know, it just pushed me. I mean, it pushed me. It opened more doors for my career. And I became this – I became the director, the Valentina director, which is really interesting. And – It's a film that I just it's such a simple concept. I remember.
Say a little bit about the film because I didn't.
Yeah. So the film is about a woman who's bringing her daughter from Mexico, and the coyotes end up kidnapping her, saying, "Well, if you don't give us more money, we're gonna just not give you your daughter." And she says, "What?" Like, and it's such a badass movie because she she goes after these guys. She goes after these guys, and then she finds out that the one of the coyotes is actually her best friend's boyfriend. Mm. So then she kidnaps her best friend. And she says, F you.
Gangster.
She kidnaps her with a gun, like gunpoint. And she says, F you. I thought we were friends. And she tells him, if you don't give my daughter, I'm going to kill your bitch ass girlfriend.
Wow.
She says,
no, but she's gangster her way through the whole trailer, too. Like, you see her just like,
she steals a car.
Does she have that gun or she stole that, too?
No, she has that gun. That's a funny part because there's in the scene, like, she just pulls it out. And people would always ask me, why would she carry a gun? I was like, I don't know. I was like, I just feel like she would, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like she would. And making that film was so much fun because, you know, you need permits to, even to shoot with fake guns. I did not know this. We were running around L.A. The cops, there's a scene where two cops in the movie. There's a scene with two cops in the movie. They're real cops. They saw us running inside the metro station. I told them, oh, I'm making a student film. Do you guys want to be in it? And they were like, sure. I got them to sign NDAs and releases, and they came out in the film. And I was like, cool. And always, every time I tell the story, people was like, you really got cops to do that? I was like, yeah. I was like, I did.
They wanted their 15 minutes, too.
Yeah, I just asked them. But it's such a badass film. And then I'm actually doing a sequel to that.
To Valentina?
Yeah.
Wow.
We're doing Valentina, too. Yeah. So
talk to me, because I noticed so far, I've seen the trailers for these films, and it seems like there's these strong female characters.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what women mean to you in your life and the women that that are important to you.
Yeah. So, you know, I was just going to get to that, like how the reason I started making films is because my mom, you know, I always see her, how she's always she went through this really like difficult marriage and she came out of it. Right. And there's moments where she tells me these stories and I'm thinking, you could have been dead. Right. Mm. And she's like, yeah. And, you know, but. You know, it just wasn't meant to happen, right? So I remember when I wanted to do Valentina, I asked her, I was like, Mom, like, I want to make a film about, you know, this woman who, like, is looking for a daughter, but I don't know. I said, what would make you go crazy? And she said, not knowing where my kids are. And she goes, if one of you got kidnapped or something when you were little. So she kind of helped me come up with that idea.
Off.
Yeah, uh-huh. And that's where I was like, okay, I need to write this. But all of my films are inspired by women because we all come out of women, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we wouldn't be here without women.
Life begins.
Life begins with women. So it's like, that's the reason why I started my production company, Mighty Aphrodite Pictures, and we concentrate in making work about women, stories mm-hmm. about women, mm-hmm. stories that empower women, and stories that that speak to people like my nieces, because they're yeah. going to grow up, and they're going to be watching all these movies with, no offense, but like, white women. And their experience is probably not going to be the same. Mm-hmm. And it's and not that we're going to go through kidnapping or anything like that, right? But it's good to know that, like, these things happen on the day-to-day basis. And I just want to make films that represent, you know, the people that I live with, that I grew up with.
Yeah.
So that's why I make those films.
I love that.
And I grew up with three women, so. Yeah. My two sisters and my mom.
That's there's a lot of, yeah, this energy, huh?
I love her.
This is where I feel like we connected. And then Hector Rosario, he texts me.
Oh,
he
my said, God, is that Hector?
He said, Jorge is a dear friend. Ah, so Hector. That you guys are connected. We love you, Jorge. Me and Hector actually met on Clubhouse.
Really?
Yeah.
So I directed a video for his client, Leo.
Leo,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
Shout out, Leo. Shout out, Hector.
He's going to be at a premiere.
Oh, he will?
Yeah, there will
be.
I can't wait to see him.
I can't wait to see him. The Clubhouse, have you gone on Clubhouse?
Never. No. It's dude. Just, I'm so like.
I invited you.
You did?
That's
but then
how
I,
we
okay,
met.
Okay, so I have to tell you, like, I went on it and I got anxiety from it. Because I was like, what is happening? What do I do? What do I listen? Like, how do I work this?
Can
you know?
They see me?
That was a question. I was like, can they see me? I was like, I hope not. And then my manager was laughing. He's like, you know, you should do it. And I was like, one day. I'm a millennial. Not that it's a bad thing, but like, I'm getting to the point of like, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say it. I just feel like.
You feel like an elder millennial? How old are you?
I'm 32. But
bro,
I'm not.
I'm 33. We're going to be fine. So Clubhouse is basically like this. I mean, you know what it is. You go on there, you listen to people talk. Yeah. But I was so surprised that I actually made like real friends off of Clubhouse. Jackie's one of them. Valentina, Arlene, like these people like actually kick it with.
Okay.
And but it's what I like about Clubhouse is that I'm pretty good at listening to people.
Yeah.
So I like listening to people to see who they are. Mm. Like I like to hear the way they think and so I like that you get to because it's a bunch of people sharing opinions and most of the time they have like professional settings but the rooms we met in were not professional at all. So it was just us kicking it like if we were in a backyard somewhere, you know? So that's and then we eventually after the pandemic, I mean, we still in the pandemic, let's be honest. But then when everything lifted, we all met up and hung out at whose backyard?
What's his name?
My God, I fucked up right now. Rick. We hung out at his backyard. This is also something I listen to like before every podcast because it's just it.
Oh,
I needed
Selena.
To pump me up. Wait, do we have any comments?
Oh my God, that's the medley too.
Oh, it's the medley, honey. Oh, the God. Disco medley. And you want to know why this inspires me so much? Because it inspires me so much because first of all, she has a broken nail. Let's start there. And second of all,
her
earring falls. She can't get her jacket off. And this specific thing inspires me so much because it reminds me to let go of the expectation of perfection because there's nothing that's not perfect about that performance. Yeah. And it's like, it just
but
reminds me. Like, it just, it empowers me so much. Just like, I feel like that's what, because we growing up didn't have that many Latina, you know, to look up to. And she was just a strong, powerful figure. My God. In all of our lives, and those are kind of films you make.
I know, and I think about like, and I don't like to think about that, but like, where would she be right now? You know, if she was here right now.
Oh, man, let me see. Let me check these comments.
Oh, we have. Oh, see, there he is, Hector. There is a cat. Shout out, Hector. Said you bring light. Someone says you bring light.
Oh,
which you absolutely
thank you.
Do.
So I love that. I love that. This is my favorite movie. I listen to it a lot.
This is it right here. You can't.
It makes me want a dad. She's so like.
We just vibe out to this. Yeah. And I really hope Selena's dad doesn't kick us off the fucking live. Oh, Abraham. Fucking Abraham. Did you watch the Selena, the Netflix series?
I did, yeah. Moises Zamora, actually, one of the creators. I know him.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, in the industry, I mean, we're part of a collective. And when I heard that he was doing it, I was so happy.
Yeah.
It needed to be told, yeah.
So how did you feel about the way it was executed? Like, how did you feel about the series?
You know what? I will say that the first season was a little challenging for me to watch.
Same.
But just
it was
because,
the Abraham show.
Well, it was a Wigs for me.
And the Party City outfits.
Yes.
No, that's fucked up because that was really angering though. Because it was like, no, not Bridgerton. Not Bridgerton with the like a whole iconic wardrobe. Like, you know, down while you could throw some more money up in there. Like, don't play with me, Netflix.
And the second season was good. You know, I have a lot of opinions about it, but what I will say is that I'm proud that we were able to have someone in the industry, Latino, be able to bring this to life because you know we know the difficulties of what it is to make a show. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of them.
That's real. And that there was like a lot of debate in the Latino community about this film.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like how you were saying, like the people that have gatekept you the most are Latinos.
Yeah.
And it's like we do that to ourselves. And look, man, I don't have the answers, but I just like to point out the problem sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I think this, it's like, what do you think we need? What do you think we as a community, Latino, Latinx, what do you think this community needs to in order to unite?
I think we need to stop creating collectives. I think we need to stop creating, you know, all these diversity programs. And what we need to do is actually get together and do something, you know. Let's create something. Let's create, let's empower and push each other to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Because... You know, can I say words, bad words?
Please.
We bitch about the lack of inclusion in the industry. So we create these collectives so that we can go bitch in private. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
To each other.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm part of a couple collectives. I don't even know if I'm still part of them because I keep getting invited and I just keep not going. Because
and
honestly,
you're talking shit about them now, so maybe they...
Like, maybe they're going to be like, screw you, you know, bye, Jorge. But like, honestly, like, I it doesn't mean they're bad people. You know, and I get it. It's difficult.
You just feel like that's not the answer.
That's not the answer, no. And I think that if we can take something from the Black community, how they came together and they put their egos aside and they were able to create something, I think we should be able to do that. But it always comes down to, oh, well, we're Latinos from different places and we don't understand each other.
Well, it's further division.
Well, how about you forget about where we're from
and
just remember the bigger picture.
Uh-huh.
That we need to create.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is what needs to happen. But I've always been told that I'm wrong, so I'm going to shut up now.
Well, you're not wrong on the Millennial Mija podcast, okay? On the Millennial Mija podcast, Selena is the president.
And Jenny's the vice president.
Yes. No, Jenny's the secretary of defense. Because, you know, she don't fucking play.
I like that.
Yeah,
attorney general.
No, actually, on the Millennial Mija podcast, we don't have a government.
Okay.
It's chaos. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Anarchy.
I like that.
So I want to talk to you about, like, I've heard you talking about believing in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do a workshop on it, but I haven't even gotten enough. I don't have enough wisdom on it yet. So I like gather it from the people that I see believe in themselves. I'm like, okay, tell me what you know. Like, how do you do it? What does it take for you to believe in yourself? Like, I know it took to 2015,
mm-hmm.
But like on the days where you don't, how do you keep going?
Well, you know, for me, I'll tell you my specific experience. To me, I was I remember. Myself always encouraging people and saying, I believe in you. Do it. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. And then in 2016, when I decided that I wanted to make Blue Land Station, I mean, I decided I wanted to make it in March, but I actually didn't make it until about June or July because I was still doubting myself. And I remember I said to someone, well, you have the tools to make to, and it was something about a blog, I think he was trying to do, a friend of mine. I was like, you have the tools to make it because you know how to, you know, create websites and this and that. And he just kept finding every excuse not to do it. And I thought, well, if I believe in him and he doesn't, why don't I use that energy and, you know, push it towards me?
Man.
I was like, why? Like, why not, you know? And then I started looking at it from a business perspective. I was like, well, you know, if I'm going to buy, like, a pair of shoes and I'm going to give him the money, why don't I build my own shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Which I can, but I was thinking, like, if I don't have the money, why don't I just make my own shoes, right? It was kind of like a metaphor, you know? And then I started thinking, you know, okay, well, I want fries, but I don't have $5 to go get them, but I have potatoes, why not cut them and make it for myself? You know, so it was just kind of like these metaphors that I kept like coming up, and then I came to a point where I said, I'm going to continue supporting people and pushing them, but I need to do, I need to push myself first. And I actually went away for a whole year while I was making molestation. Like, I disappeared.
People Where'd thought you
I
go?
Was probably dead. I just stayed home and worked. Oh, okay. And, like, you know, because I had to learn how to edit. So then I learned how to edit, and I had to
Wait,
learn
so you had no
nope.
at all, like, never nothing. Even iMovie'd it out nothing. For a project no. for college or nothing?
No, I talk about how, like, I had Final Cut Pro, which is the software that I used to edit. Yeah. I had the torrent version, like, I downloaded it illegally.
The X, Final Cut Pro X?
Yeah, That's but I downloaded it illegally from, like, one of those torrents, and I actually didn't buy it until last year for Melancholia. I was like, oh, I was like, I can afford it, I can buy it now, right? So I bought it, but I always talk about how, like, I didn't know. Like, I would dump footage from my phone and just, like, it was so common sense to me. I was like, well, this looks like a little knife, which means I can cut the video here. And this is, like, it was just...
It was very intuitive.
It was just kind of, like, looking into how to put together a little file. And I was like, well, maybe if I cut this here and I put it here and I have to match it. And that's how I learned. Mm-hmm. So I went away for a whole year. And that's how I talk about believing in myself. Because I could have been like, okay, I shot this film and I have all the footage. Now I need to find an editor. Where do I find an editor, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've heard that story so many times. I know someone who actually shot a film in 2017, and they still haven't, like, finished editing, you know? And I offer...
Valentina, finish your film, bitch. finish it. Yeah, well, she's been looking for an editor forever.
It's
all this
hard.
Time. No, look, that's my friend, and I want her. That film needs to exist. She did a documentary in El Salvador about MS.
Ooh.
Like, MS-18.
Yeah.
But she... So in this... Sorry. ADHD sidetrack, guys. She goes into, there's only one way out of that gang, and it's through this one specific church in El Salvador. And so if they go through that church, that's the only, like, way that the gang lets them exit through this. And so it's like a story about a man who leaves the gang and his life, and it's just an important story that
is,
needs,
yeah.
And the only thing that's holding it back is a goddamn editor.
It's hard, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, because I've been editing all my films, all of them. I still edit all my films. I do all of them to end. I even had to learn about sound design, which I didn't know, which I'm still not very good at, but I had to learn, you know, the basics. And it all came down to, like, telling myself, it's common sense. Like, how do you make mole? How do you make pozole? You know, like, I have
There's
to
There's a recipe.
You just like, go online, like, YouTube it. And that's where, like, believing in myself started, you know? Because if I don't believe in myself, no one else will. No one is going to believe in me, you know?
So. And you know from the thing with your friend that even when someone does, it won't matter.
Yeah. Because it's like, well, you know, they'll believe in you, but it's like, things won't happen.
They can't move your arms and legs for you to do shit for you, you know? That you said on another interview that you were a huge advocate for mental health.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. Talk to me about...
when I say that I'm a huge advocate for mental health, I mean I'm a huge advocate for speaking. You know, for speaking in general. Oh, my God. And yesterday, I was actually having a conversation with someone. I hope he's not listening, but... I was having a conversation
you
with someone.
You know who you are.
I was having a conversation with someone who who said to me how he felt really stuck because he couldn't speak about how he was feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, and this was at my niece's party, by the way. It got really deep. And I said, well, here's the thing. I was like, we're part of a community where depression doesn't exist, right? Because in the Latino community, it's like, you know, you're not depressed. You're okay. You'll get over it. Like, my mom would always say that, right? But now she doesn't. Now she understands. But this man in his 40s who's married, who has kids, he's like, I don't want to, you know, smile anymore because I have kids now and I can't be fun. And I'm like, that's you in your head. And then we kept talking about it. And he said how he just felt like he was being suffocated in a way. Mm. And I said, well, I think that there's this idea that when you get married and you have children, you have to be... You are the man of the house.
But that is your only identity.
Yeah, and that you're masculine and you can't be fun because, you know, it's like, you know, that's only you. Like, you know, you're what's that saying that I would say? The only thing standing in your way is yourself. And it's like, I'm a huge advocate of speaking. And I said to him, if you don't want to talk, you can call me, dude. And I was like, I don't have a problem. But you need to speak about these things because mm-hmm. if you don't speak about them, you hold on to them.
Well, they eat you alive.
They do. And that's why, I mean, taking it to a complete different perspective, that's why a lot of relationships don't work because people hold on to things mm-hmm. and then they hold on to them. And then when there's this fight, it becomes this huge fight and you start throwing everything in. It's like, I have no problem telling you that you ate my burrito and you're an asshole for that. And now, like, it's not cool. And so it's really like you have to talk about those things because it's always
a
little thing.
You crossed the boundary.
You did. Like, you took my burrito. And that's not cool, right? But a lot of people don't talk about those things. And that's what I mean when I talk about mental health. You need to speak. Mm-hmm. Communication is huge. At a job, at an interview, at your therapy, whatever. You just got to speak and tell, because no one's going to figure out how you're feeling.
Well, also how arrogant I feel sometimes that people are to think that, like, you came home from a war, though. Like, you came home from a war, or you lost your mom. Like, these are things that are known traumatic events that if you were to see someone else grieving, you'd be like, yeah, their mom died. Mm. But when it comes to yourself, you're like, oh, well, no.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do, cry about it? Like, well, actually, yeah, because it's like science. Like, it's like mental and it's science. It's like proven facts that letting things out helps you process them.
So I always ask people this question when they say that they hold on their tears and stuff like that. What happens if you hold on your pee?
Exactly.
What happens?
Bladder infection.
You probably get kidney stones. The exact same thing happens when you hold on to feelings.
Yeah.
When you don't let them out. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why we have feelings. There's a reason why we feel these things, you know? And if you don't fully express them, and if you don't fully live through your truth in that sense, then you're going to be ill. That's what depression is.
You have like this backpack of shit that you don't want to tell anyone. 100%. And you don't know that you can put it down at any time.
You can also just write in journaling.
Yeah.
You know how good that is?
I do.
Ugh. But again, there's this stigma that, you know, what if someone finds a journal? Or like, what if I tell somebody they judge me? Well, listen, however people interpret it, that's out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point is for you to like speak.
It's
you
know? Maintenance.
Yeah.
Like, it's maintenance because there is something called spiritual hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way you need to brush your teeth every day or else your shit's going to get musty.
Mm-hmm.
You also need to, like, brush your spiritual teeth.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so that's what I have something called a sunset ceremony. So during my detox, my way of maintaining my mental health, because most of those days, because when you no longer have a buffer, you actually have to, feel your life. Like the things that you actually have to fill your life. And so I was no longer numb. So it was difficult for me to feel like I wanted to be here. And so I needed something to ground me. I was seeing a healer and a therapist at the same time. And through my healer, I was told that I needed a daily practice. And on those days, so it was like all through 2019 and then quarantine, it was like an extension of it. So that was hard in its own way. But my daily practice became my sunset ceremony, and that's where I would go and watch the sunset in Highland Park.
I love that.
And I would write in my journal. The whole 2019 was me learning how to just be quiet. I couldn't even write till 2020. I didn't even start a journal till 2020 again. And because I didn't know how to be quiet. Yeah. And I learned that when I tried to do this and I was like, this is hard. Like, I wanted to get on my phone. I was looking around because I never had done things before alone. So it was like I was learning to be quiet. And then once I was learning to be still and listen, that's what I learned the first year. And then the second year, I had always journaled. I'm a poet. I always write. But I just stopped those things. I stopped doing those things. When you stop taking care of yourself and your mental health declines, it's no surprise.
Yeah.
You know, it's no surprise. But when you're not paying attention to your life, it's just everything's a surprise. So, I mean, I started this sunset ceremony and it completely saved me because it gave me something to look forward to. I tell the same story and it's like I didn't have anything. Like, I felt like my life was so chaotic at that time. Like, nothing was for sure. Like, my mood was up and down. Like, I was fighting with my mom. It was like my physical body was like detoxing, so it was like hard physically. Nothing was like for sure. Everything was just chaotic, and the only thing that I could count on every day was that the sun was gonna set.
Yeah.
And so I at least had that, and I at least had somewhere to go and somewhere that I felt like I connected to, like, spirit. And like I don't do it every day anymore because I don't need it anymore because I'm getting stronger every day, but it's something that I want to be a part of my life forever, you know, because like I said, it's my spiritual maintenance.
Yeah.
So I want to know what yours is.
You know, I don't know. I mean, well, actually, no, I do know. I do know. Yeah, it's driving. I started taking a lot of drives. I remember now. Yeah.
That's its own meditation.
When I was able to get, drive again, like, I was able to get my car and drive again, the first thing I did was I just drove. And I drove and I drove and I ended up in Joshua Tree. Yeah, and I like, now it's like, it's become a thing. And the reason why I said I don't know is because I haven't done it in a while, but I'll just get in my car and I'll drive to a faraway place where there's no city, no lights. And I like watching the stars. I know that sounds like super cliche, but I'm obsessed with space.
Girl, so does the sunset.
I love just looking upstairs, up there and thinking like, what's going on?
It's medicine. Yeah. Our, like, everything we need is already here. Yeah. It's just whether or not we decide to take those tools and use them.
Yeah. And then I was just driving silence because I love just like not thinking about anything. Yeah. And it's amazing. Like I don't know. I didn't even think about it that way now. But now you were just mentioning that it's just driving. Mm-hmm. I love going on road trips by myself.
It's controlled time to be alone. Yeah. It's like, because it feels appropriate. Because like it was hard for me to be alone at first when I started this season of self journey. My first place I ever went by myself, like to take myself on a date, was to the Louis Vuitton exhibit on Rodeo Drive. That was something I wanted to do, but I didn't have anybody to do it with. And then I was like, those are going to be the things that I do alone. Like, no, I'm not going to wait for somebody to take me to this shit. I'm going to go. And so I went, and I remember it was so difficult for me to be there because of where I was at in my life, I felt like everyone was looking at me.
Yeah.
But actually, no one gave a fuck.
Yeah.
So it's like such a process to get through, the stages of the spiritual maintenance, like the stages of your journey to self, you know, like we're all just on a journey back to ourselves. And I think that when we create art, when I do these podcasts, when I write, I'm working on my own screenplay.
That's amazing.
When I work on these things and I like let the art out of me, I feel like it changes the world. It's the way I change the world.
And don't you feel the growth when because you're able to talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. I, you know, something similar just happened to me. I wouldn't use public restrooms because I would feel that people would be watching me. No, seriously, it's so stupid.
Wait, like with a camera?
No, just in general.
Oh, like people through the door?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like it was like my, or I wouldn't go, like I would go to McDonald's, but I wouldn't go in there. I would go through the drive-thru. Like little things like that. I wouldn't go to the grocery store because I was afraid that people would be looking at me, you know, weird and having body dysphoria and things like that. Just thinking that people are always like, looking at me. And then I got to a point where I just kind of didn't care anymore. Again, after 2015. Yeah, I just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go, like, I'm hungry. I'm going to go get food.
It was like a reset.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to the gym because I'm sure a lot of people think about it this way, but I wouldn't go to the gym because I would think people would be judging me.
Same.
And now I just go and, you know, it's so weird because, like, when you become confident about certain things, like, you see people end up looking at you, but it's different.
Yeah. And
it's like
they're looking at you for a different reason than you initially thought.
Yeah, someone came up to me this morning at the gym and said, there's something about you that's very, like, he's like, this guy said, he's like, I'm not gay, but there's something about you. Like, you have this attraction. I was like, oh. And that was when I was like,
yeah, you're like, I like myself.
I was like, that's okay, let thing. Me continue. Because he came on, like, tapped me. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, weirdo. And there's you're me like, judging you're like, it, right?
Mate, are you sure you're not gay?
And there's me judging him. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
Wait, are you dating anyone?
No.
Okay. So you're single, ready to mingle? Just for anyone watching, hello, hello.
Like a Pringle.
Single like a Pringle. You know what? So, well, just throw it out there. What would be your perfect date?
Perfection doesn't exist, though.
Yeah. Well, so, what would be, like, the most joyful, like, funnest date you could think of? Man,
just having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, over food.
Yeah.
Or not food, but just having a conversation, you know? Yeah. Like, it'd be nice to, like, get to know someone and just talk about, you know, what, like, turns you. Like, what really fuels your, you know, your life.
Yeah. Getting like to that. Know someone, yeah. Like, knowing them. What kind of qualities do you look for in a partner?
I don't think about those things. Because honestly, I think that whenever I get to meet someone, I'm going to, like, if it's someone that I automatically have an attraction to and it works out, it'll be for whoever they are, for how they are. So I don't have, you know, I'm not the kind of person that's like, oh, he needs to have like a
checklist.
700 score, you know, like credit score.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. No, it's really just about the chemistry.
Yeah. And it's about like also just, again, we have all these ideals of like, he needs to have this. And I don't care. Like, look, if you... As long as, like, you have ambitions for yourself, because I'm not going to be there to, like, hold your hand, you know? Like, we should all have, like, it should be someone that's already happy on its own, because we'll come together to create new happiness.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm not going to make you happy. I shouldn't be the reason why you're happy.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to, like, you know, be working.
You want someone that's also on their, like, on their self-love thing, like, because you don't want to have to...
babysit them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone who wants to be better in not just like the, you know, aspirations and all that, but like personally better than what they are. I think people that are stuck in who they are, sometimes they're kind of like, oh, well, I have a temper, but it's like, oh, that's just how I am.
Yeah.
You know, like these like kind of excuses of like, so it's like, oh, that's not a personality type. It's called an anger management problem.
Yes.
Like, okay, that can be fixed. Like you, it's not just who you are. Like you choose who you are. You didn't just like, you know, they didn't just.
Yeah. It's like someone once told me this is what I have something against Virgos. No offense to any Virgo in here. But I met someone who said to me, well, I'm just like very moody because I'm a Virgo. I was like, no,
you're just an asshole.
I was like, you're an asshole, okay?
Yeah.
He was like, Mercury's in retrograde. I was like, I don't care about Mercury. Gatorade. Like, I didn't even know what that meant. I was like, I don't care about Mercury and Gatorade. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, I don't care. I was like, you're just an asshole. And then, I Googled it and I was like, oh, okay, I know what that means. But no, people that find excuses to like, what is it, to justify their actions? Mm-mm.
To stay the same.
No.
Like, I have this tattoo. It says evolve.
I love that.
I got this tattoo when I was 18. I actually just did on Friday. I had like two presentations for this school, the wonderful school. Like I did like a virtual assembly mm-hmm. for middle school and high school. And one of the questions that they asked me was like, which one of your tattoos means the most? And I was like, no one's ever asked me that. Great question. Mm. And I said this one, the butterfly with the word evolve. I got it when I was like 18. And with no fucking life experience at all. Yeah. Like, I had no idea why this was the word that I got. Like, the symbolism, it just kind of escaped me. It was just, like, cute at the time. And it was, like, myself, like, my true self was, like, showing little pieces, yeah. like, flashing herself at me in these moments. And when I look back, I'm like, wow, this tattoo, like, really became the theme of my life. Like,
yeah.
I think it should be the theme of all of our lives,
yeah.
you know, to continuously evolve. And
because whether you like it or not, it happens. Sorry, but like, yeah. I just want to say, whether you like it or not, we evolve.
Mm-hmm.
It's just your mindset that stays stuck sometimes.
You can accept it or reject it.
Yeah.
And there's so much peace that comes with accepting that part about you. It's like, I think I read a meme that was like, being in love with someone is like attending a million different funerals for the people they used to be.
Mm.
You know, like really loving someone
yeah.
and being okay with the fact that they're not the same person that they were when you met. But yeah. it's like we grow together. And yeah. we grow in love, you know? So anyways, that was a tangent. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This is like such an easy conversation. Like, did we just become best friends?
Yes!
I think we did. So much room for activities.
I love it. I love it. No, thank you for having me. I oh my God. I love it. I love coming here. You guys are awesome.
My last question is for a little, if you had some words for a little undocumented boy in Torrance growing up right now
mm-hmm.
who wants to be a filmmaker someday, what would you say to that little boy?
Oh, I would say, I feel like I had this, someone asked me the other day. Yeah, I would just tell him not to take anything personal.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, it's not about you. Mm-hmm. It's about them. How they see you. It's about them. That's it. Don't take anything personal.
Yeah. That's a major key alert right there. Major key alert. Do not take anything personal.
Never.
I'm thankful for everyone who watched the podcast today. Thank you for watching the Millennial Miha podcast. Thank you, Jorge, for being here
and for bringing
so much light. Like, you really attract. You just attract and you emanate light. So thank you for being here.
That.
And yeah, we're going to be back Sunday, 3:30. Live every Sunday. So we'll see you next time. And this has been the Millennial Miha Podcast. Bye.
Hello?
It's the motherfucking Millennial Miha Podcast.